It's Friday!
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this fourth day of February, the first Friday on the front porch of February 2022. And this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's, of course, where you go if you would like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And all times in between, and the great globe round. Hi, I'm Robin, and I'm going to try not to be in kind of a gray and gloomy mood, because it's gray and gloomy outside, and we're waiting for to hit the fan. So far, we've been lucky. The ice and snow that's been hammering the bejesus out of the rest of the country has thus far not gotten here, but we've got a 50... We've got a... half and half chance of snow, a little bit of snow through the evening and the early morning hours, and a 50% chance tomorrow. And come Saturday night, it's going to just get brutally cold again, some more. But you know what? Winter is dying. Now, some would say, don't jinx this, Robin, and we'll knock wood, and on the head, too, just to make sure. But Imbolc was the second. And so we are downhill to the first day of spring. And that lifts my spirits. But anyway, every program here at what I was going to say is, if you want to be part of that, the aforementioned, run on over to HeadOn.live and click on chat room, where if you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, if you don't already have one, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Kid Mark and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has double space folded, because he is a third stage guild navigator, and he is both Sparky and Man Cave, folding space back and forth between two locations. The spice must flow. And hopefully more folks will be wandering by, and here in about an hour's time, we will go over the river and through the woods and gather together in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, where we keep the extraordinary ordinary round table, around which we gather every Friday to cuss and discuss the issues of the day, anything we might have missed along the way. Hopefully a little bit of lightheartedness, maybe, as well. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and so thanks go out. Thanks go out to our fourth day of the month subscribers. That means thanks to Paul, and thanks to Dave, and thanks to Kim and Malin, and thank you to Thomas. Thank you all so much for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to my dear, dear, beloved friend, Miss Lila, and Miss Holly, and little Miss Maggie May, jumping in to actually get us down below the fundraising goal that is, I think, on the website. It was like $11.25. We're down to like $10.99 now. Thank you. Thank you, Lila. Thank you. And so with that, also taking note that we have, I had some correspondence from our dear, dear friend Rico up in DeBerg. Rico said, yikes, when I told Rico that we were down, we were at 11:20 to finish the week. Yikes! So let me put up a fuck winter challenge. I'll put up $100 and we'll put another 100 when it's met. Hopefully we can make a dent in this so Lassie doesn't have to rescue you from the well. Love you, my queen. Rico in the ice encrusted, but still somehow, quiescent Berg. Thank you, Rico. I'm glad it's quiescent. I always noted that word on the popsicle box, a quiescently frozen treat. Yes. Thank you, Rico. And so maybe there's folks out there that want to meet $100 worth of that $100 challenge, and that'll get us fully funded for like last Tuesday, and we can work on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Well, you get the idea. So thank you again, Rico. Thank you. And stay warm, and, you know, we'll just keep Lassie in tonight because she doesn't have any business out in this cold. Billable Rick saying, Robin, how do you know that winter is dying? Did Giraffe see his own shadow on Wednesday? I think he's too far up there to see his shadow. It's entirely behind him. Maybe Junior saw it. But, yeah, well played, Billable. Well played. And a note from Joey. Some sad times and bad people. On this day back in 1988, the U.S. House of Representatives handed President Ronald Reagan, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, that greasy-headed B-movie actor, a major defeat, rejecting his request for $36.2 million in new aid to fund the Nicaraguan Contras. Mommy. By a vote of 219 to 211, the Contras were a group of terrorists illegally funded by Ronald Reagan to help assist the funneling of cocaine into the United States, which gave us, in part, Iran-Contra. The Contras committed human rights violations in their attempts to overturn the rule of the democratically elected Sandinistas. The Sandinistas were no saints, but they did attempt to bring literacy programs, health care, and gender equality to the region. Jeffrey has a thought or two.
Well, yeah, some of those terrorists sang to U.S. officials during the Iran-Contra hearings, as they definitely had some part in the illegal contraband. Oh, dear.
And just as a sidebar, I've told this story before, I think, but just as a sidebar, I was an eager young journalist at CNN when all of that was going down, and I interviewed Adolfo Calero. He was one of the terrorist leaders of the Contra movement. I think in the previous life he'd been the Coca-Cola bottler in Manawa. And wait, what is this radio silence? No, we're sending, we're good. We were done with the interview, and I said, okay, Mr. Calero, we're off the record. The tape is not rolling, nothing. But I just got to know, did George H.W. Bush know what you were doing? He goes, oh, absolutely. He was our point man. He was our point of contact. He knew everything. So, you know, I've got that little footnote in history. Last week was the 20-year anniversary of George W. Bush's first State of the Union in 2002, when he railed on about terrorists who were still threatening America and warned about an axle of evil that was made up of North Korea, Iran, and Iraq. And Jeffrey has an axiom.
I'm far more worried about the asses of evil, Trump, Mitch McConnell, Joe Manchin, and Kyrsten Sinema, than I am the former axis of evil.
Well played. Good job, Jeffrey. So this leads us back to one day in history, which exposes the criminality of both Ronald Reagan, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, and George W. Bush, and that day was January the 9th. On January the 9th, 1987, the White House released a January 1986 memorandum prepared for President Ronald Reagan by Lieutenant Colonel Oliver L. North, showing the link between U.S. arms sales to Iran and the release of American hostages. Also, on January 9th, 2003, U.N. weapons inspectors stated there was no smoking gun.
We don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud, said Kinda Sleazy Rice, goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken,
to prove that Iraq had nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons. Yes, January 9th exposed two of the world's greatest war criminals in the modern era. Earlier this week, we lost one amazing woman in the former Miss USA, Chelsea Christ.
As many of you are aware by now, Chelsea Christ was a civil rights lawyer and an activist, as well as being one stunning model who paraded the world stages and competed in the Miss Universe pageant, placing ninth overall 3 years ago. Her main focus was attempting to do away with the racist cash bail system that often keeps indigent and minorities trapped in jail at all places, such as Rikers Island, when they've not been convicted of a crime. Jeffrey and I were well aware of Chelsea Christ because, ironically, it was 2 years ago, this February 1st, that Jeffrey and I met Miss Pennsylvania USA, Vicky Peacut, who competed in the pageant where Chelsea Christ relinquished her title to Miss Mississippi. Oh, Jeffrey's back. Well, yes, I have to admit that I, Jeffrey the Giraffe, fell madly in love with the former Miss Pennsylvania, even though I cannot tolerate her Republican politics. Jeffrey Giraffe. Well, I can only hope Miss Vicky had a chance to get to know Chelsea Christ and what she stood for, because that would have been a really enlightening experience. I love Miss Vicky, but Chelsea Christ is my hero. Miss Chelsea Christ, you will be missed, and now that you have left us, I only wish you the peace and freedom that you advocated, fought, and desired for so many others. Well, thank you. Thank you, Jeffrey. That was a lovely little eulogy. And finally, we're number one. We're number one. Yes, Ohio is number one per capita for COVID cases in the entire country. Congratulations, Ohio, and all you assholes around this state that will not get vaccinated. Fuck you all. Oh, and thanks to one of you or all of you collectively, I contracted COVID and have some severe effects that have caused me to have to leave my job because I'm experiencing brain fog and extensive fatigue to the point that I could no longer be functional at work. Again, I just want to thank all of you anti-vaxxing assholes who have turned my life upside down. So this has been a very morose and macabre Joey's Journal for the fourth day of February, Friday on the front porch, with Giraffrey mourning the loss of so many. And so there's a $25 Fuck You Anti-Vaxxers Challenge on the table even as we speak. Well, thank you. First $10 of that challenge has been met by Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs, and thank you, Joey. And God, I hope you can't get better fast enough to suit me. Please do everything you can to get better. Don't screw around being a hero and then I'll get better. If you can go out and get the monoclonal antibodies that actually work on Omicron, do so. Stand not upon the order if you're going, but go at once. You're the second person I know who's gotten badly sick with this, and I'm rooting for the both of you, because you're both loved. Get better soon, Joey, says Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs' heart is so good. Billable Rick, rubbing it in, says, it's a brisk 69 degrees here in sunny Orange County, also known as Mississippi County, California. Well, how about that? You got me by 6 degrees. It's 63 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. So, enjoy it. Enjoy it. You'll be complaining about the heat in a few more months, and we'll be sitting here, complaining about the heat in a few more months. Nobody's happy. Yeah, well. Leave with a weather note. Because of the mentions of Iran-Contra and the weather, can Oliver North hook you up with some snow tires? The roads are clear so far. Once upon a time, snow tires were a thing around here, but now we just get winter and annoying fits and spurts and bouts of utterly brutal cold temperatures. But it's all going away. It is. It is. And, of course, program note. I keep mentioning this just because I don't want people going, hey, where the hell are you? I will be away from the microphone the 15th, 16th, 17th, and probably 18th of February. I have my it's my 3 month checkup, but I'm 3 months this week. It'll be my 3 months and 2 weeks, so it'll be my 14 weeks checkup down in Birmingham with my surgeon, and I have every hope in the world to get a really good report on my healing.
So I'll be down there and then turn around and come right back. It's not going to be a hangout kind of situation. But that week I'll be gone, and that means fundraising. I'll take a kind of a kick in the teeth, I guess. Let's see. So, you know, mark your calendars accordingly. There will be reruns from the dim and dark and misty before time of a nearly two-decade-long experiment in conversation, independent, liberal, non-commercial, non-capitalist conversation radio. Now, with that having been said, there's kind of a big deal today. I mean, I guess we could file it under the day late and a dollar short department, but nonetheless, it is a big deal. Former Vice President Mike Pencil Neck Geek went off to the Federalist Society today and finally said something that would have been best said, oh, I don't know, over a year ago, a year and a quarter ago. Speaking at the Federalist Society, the former Vice President said, President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election. And then went on to explain, the presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone, and frankly, there is no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the American president. Under the Constitution, I had no right to change the outcome of our election. This is all true, but it should probably have an asterisk. Because way, 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 way back in the year 2000, you remember that? I do. One person did choose the president of the United States. And that person was, of course, America's first woman Supreme Court Justice, Sandra Day O'Connor, who knew better. But nonetheless, she put politics before her country. And instead of letting Florida just finish counting the damn ballots, gave the presidency to George W. Bush. I'm going to start a war. Yeah. But more, and I guess you could say that the former vice president was actually kind of graceful, because I haven't found any reporting on his remarks that suggests that he made any mention of the fact that the supporters of Nitwit Nero were barking and grunting and hooting all over the Capitol grounds, singing, we'll hang Mike Pence from the sour apple tree, we'll hang Mike Pence from the sour apple tree, or something like that. Well, at the very least, they were barking and grunting and hooting, hang Mike Pence. So we have here the historical record of a historical moment, frankly, way too daggum long in the making, but make it Mike Pence, in fact, did.
President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election. The presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone. And frankly, there is no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the American president. Under the Constitution, I had no right to change the outcome of our election.
And he's absolutely right. Wow. Does that make me feel crazy, saying Mike Pence was right about something? But, you know, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. And enjoy your acorn, Mike. But it's not, the thing is, while it's being hailed by people like Jonathan Carl as an extraordinary moment, it shouldn't be. Simply honoring one's constitutional oath should not be deemed extraordinary. Daring to disagree with a malevolent, misanthropic, ignorant, credibly accused sexual abuser, sexual assaulter, potential tyrant, dictator wannabe, should not be an extraordinary moment. in this country, but there you go. And, you know, here we are. So maybe we'll talk about that when we get onto the front porch, because that's a big deal. Oh, and by the way, just a completely separate topic, but one of the two senators from the state of Wyoming, Stan, is Senator Cynthia Lummis. I don't know if it's Loomis or Lummis. It's L-U-M-M-I-S, so I'm assuming that means Lummis. Now, quit that. I did not say Lummix. Senator Cynthia Lummis. And yesterday there was a confirmation hearing about President Biden's nominee to be the vice chair for supervision of the Federal Reserve. That woman's name is Sarah Bloom Raskin. And Senator Cynthia Lummis, who apparently has an extremely short memory, or maybe is utterly unaware of this. I mean, and to say that is cutting her some serious slack. She got all head up over the fact that as she left, as Ms. Raskin left, a little known financial tech company called Reserve Trust. She got 200,000 shares of stock. She later offloaded it for $1.5 million. And, well, I have a hard time working up a terribly big sad for a millionaire. But, oh, well. Senator Lummis and Ms. Raskin got into a back and forth with Senator Lummis saying,
you leave Treasury, you serve on the Board of Reserve Trust for 2 years. Their first application for a master account is denied, but after the denial, you call the Federal Reserve, and Reserve Trust receives a federal master account, the only state-chartered trust company in the country to get one, and you walk away with $1.5 million. Something doesn't smell right with the way this played out. My state's companies, my constituents, have been stonewalled, have been slow-walked, and have not been able to get approval, even though they've been working with the Fed for 2.5 years. I don't know the details here, she buried the lead. I don't know the details, because the Fed hasn't provided us with any documents we've asked about Reserve Trust Master Account, but I think this requires additional scrutiny by the committee. And curiously, no thunderbolts came, no lightning bolts came roaring down from on high off Olympus, or, the goddess of irony didn't even drop a whoopee cushion underneath her or anything. Because, of course, if you really want to talk about somebody who has some sketchy money in their life, well, just not too awfully far from where that Senate hearing was taking place, there's a little old building called the Supreme Court of the United States, SCOTUS. And on the bench of said court sits a fella by the name of Brett Kavanaugh, who likes beer, but and is also a credibly accused sexual predator. But never mind that. That's a dog bites man story, because the Supreme Court already has a credibly accused sexual predator on it in the form of Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas. Never mind. But the bigger story is that nobody still, well, I mean, I won't say nobody knows, because I'm pretty sure Brett Kavanaugh knows. You know, he likes beer. He knows who paid his mortgage off. He knows who paid off the credit card debt. He knows who paid for his hot dog tab at Washington and all those season tickets at Washington Nationals, because he likes beer, but he especially likes his beer with some baseball, some very expensive baseball. He knows, but, well, and I guess the people who did the paying know, but, gosh, the rest of us don't. So, well, you watch this space. But I'm having a hard time joining in her indignation
in this particular instance. Oh, and in a case of wow, somebody really doesn't get it. Here we have an aggrieved Trump supporter in the state of Arizona, and Republican John Fillmore. He's a member of the Arizona House of Representatives, and he is upset because he filed a bill to let state lawmakers in Arizona reject any election results they don't like, meaning Republicans get to, say, reject an election result where, gosh, they wish that Republican had won. The Speaker of the House in Arizona, dude by the name of Rusty Bowers, sent the election bill, and this is just some legislative legerdemain. He sent the bill to all 12 standing House committees in Arizona. That means that that bill would have had to pass out of every one of those 12 committees in order to be considered by the body as a whole on the floor. Well, according to Representative John Fillmore, Rusty Bowers does things like he's God. In fact, he went on, it's like a 12... God, these people. It's like a 12-committee lynching. No, really, not getting your way and not creating a tyrannical system where the legislature of Arizona wouldn't even have to so much as countenance actual election results. It's like a lynching. And I'm not going to be graphic about this, because we all know what lynching means, and we know that not getting your way in a legislative body is not the same as a lynching. You know, I'm running for a seat in the West Virginia House. I would be in a distinct minority were I to win, and I acknowledge that. I would hope to introduce some bills. But, you know, I can promise you that if I got subjected to that kind of legislative legerdemain, I would never use that term. Never, ever, ever. Just no. But it might be interesting to know that representing Fillmore is what you call a 2020 truther. He's one of those people that is clinging tenaciously to the idea that somehow or another the cleanest election ever run in the history of the United States, and that having been said by Nitwit Nero's own Justice Department, was somehow stolt from Donald Trump. And yet somehow or another, representing Fillmore managed to win. Republicans all over Arizona won. It's not like they got their majority taken away from them. But the election was stole from my God Emperor. Representing Fillmore talking last week at a committee hearing said, I don't care what the press says. I don't trust ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox, or anybody out there. Everybody's lying to me, and I feel like I have a couple of hundred ex-wives hanging around me. Oh, nice misogyny. Somebody needs a little vacation. And as Rolling Stone noted, Fillmore's bill would have enabled the legislature to accept or reject the results of primary and general elections and have severely curtailed ballot access by eliminating early voting and voting by mail, practices that aided turnout in highly populated Democrat-friendly areas. We should have voting, in my opinion, in person, one day, on paper, with no electronic means and hand counting that day. We need to get back to 1958-style voting. That, again, was Fillmore at the hearing, and interesting he would choose 1958. Yeah, I wonder how easy it was for people who weren't white to vote in Arizona in 1958.
Arizona only became a state in 1912, so that kind of precluded him from being able to say what was really on his heart, and that is, we need to go back to voting like it's 1858. 1858. They are tenacious, and they are pernicious. You know, over the last few weeks, we've talked about a guy in Dallas, a dude by the name of Michael Protzman. And Michael Protzman is, by almost any metric, outside anything you could define as typical, ordinary, normal, mainstream, and some might say sane. I consulted the Fox News style manual before I used that some might say part. Michael Protzman has pretty much declared himself a prophet. This is the guy who is waiting in Dallas, because of course Dallas, for the return of JFK. It's kind of like was it Lenny Bruce who said, what do you think Jesus will think if he comes back and finds a bunch of people using the device that was used to murder him hanging around their necks? Oh, no! Not again! If John F. Kennedy was to return, don't you think maybe he might like to... I can't believe I just said that. If John F. Kennedy was to return... Mother! But really, don't you think he'd show up at, like, Hyannisport? Or hell, maybe he'd think it was November the 23rd, 1963, and just show up at the White House. Where's Jackie? Where's Jackie? But no, Michael Protzman's convinced that John F. Kennedy is coming back, and he's coming back to Dallas. Maybe he'll show up on the grassy knoll, or maybe at the book depository. Where is that little bastard? Oh, I'm gonna kick his... Sorry, dude, he's... Jack Ruby blew him away. What? Who's Jack Ruby? Never mind. So, now, have fresh off of declarations that we've talked about before, for instance, that JFK is coming back, and that Zombie Prince is playing in a band masquerading as the Rolling Stones at a Nitwit Nero rally in Arizona last month. I mean, the swirly straw has a lot is strong with this one. Well, now he's getting a little Jim Jonesy. Now, bear in mind that back in 2019, his wife had to flee their home to a neighbor's house and call 911, where she turned in Michael Protzman, and he was arrested in King County there, in Washington State, for unlawful imprisonment and domestic violence. And the news story account provides the account of one woman, Patricia, according to Tom Baggioni over at Raw Story. Well, she decamped to Dallas this past November to await for the return of John F. Kennedy. I mean, wow, every time I say that or read that, it's just, it makes my little neurons hurt. Well, she stuck around for a while, and then she left for good. And according to a report in Vice, when she left again in the final weekend of November, Patricia said she was leaving for good. Her daughter, Laura, said, we just started to feel very helpless at that point and just very sad and backed into a corner because we had a big feeling that she was not coming back. And so she went to Dallas, left Dallas, and then left again for... Well, Vice finishes the story saying, Patricia cut off almost all communication with her family when she traveled to Dallas. You know, that's how cults work. Worried about her safety, Patricia's family tried to get the police involved, but when the police spoke to Patricia and she appeared to be fine, they told the family there was nothing more they could do. And then on December 2nd, the family went to court and got an emergency guardianship and had her admitted to a psychiatric behavioral health facility. Well, she got out of there, too. And she wrote a letter to her family saying, the search for JFK Jr., because now it's expanded beyond JFK to JFK Jr., the search for, and these are Republicans. These are maggots, okay? These are hardcore Trump supporters who have glommed on to the memory of John Kennedy and John Kennedy Jr. for reasons that really sort of course it defies common sense. The search for JFK Jr. turned into a much more meaningful one, a much more intense spiritual one. I need to say the path I took was and is still a very spiritual walk with God. I've come to that conclusion, and I know it's something I've given a lot of thought to. I can't go back. I can't live in the past. Thank you so much for the years we shared. It was full of many wonderful memories that I will always treasure. And it's all because of Michael Protzman. I mean, it's not Kool-Aid and cyanide yet, or I'm sorry, Flavor-Aid. But one family, or the member of one family, said that the people who are clustered around Michael Protzman drink a mixture that includes industrial bleach out of a communal bowl as part of a ritual. They're doing a little sightseeing, too, having gone to Waco to see, or near Waco, to see where the Branch Davidians were, David Koresh. And Protzman is telling people on the Telegram audio chat channel that they need to cut ties to their family. He said that there were 17 dead celebrities in an online chat he was talking in. And convinced themselves, the people who actually believe the rest of this wackadoodle madness, began speculating. He wouldn't say who the 17 were, but they figured out pretty quick that Marilyn Monroe was one of them. Oh, my. Whew. Again, the story is over at Vice if you want to read it. Holy cow. QAnon Dallas cult growing. But it only makes sense that one of them would be Marilyn Monroe, and Prince. I don't know where Prince comes into this. Is John Lennon there? I mean, at first blush, it sounds kind of, wow, these people are woohoo. But there are people who love them. There are people who are worried, absolutely sick about them. And not a blessed thing can be done. Because deprogramming someone from a cult is an unpleasant and time-consuming and not always successful task. I mean, back in the day of the Moonies and the Krishnas, deprogramming was said to take something like 6 weeks, I think. And yeah, and the person from the cult had to be kept absolutely isolated from any possibility of contact with the cult in order to deprogram them. And of course, now we are in a situation in this country where perhaps one third of the country is in a cult. How do you deprogram that? I think it's at the very least, an interesting and terrifying
question. What else? Plenty. Little news out of the Ohio Supreme Court. 7 members on that court. And you would think that the definition of something as grave as rape wouldn't be particularly controversial. But on Wednesday, the Supreme Court ruled in the case of a woman from Highland County, Ohio. The woman was convicted by the trial court, and the conviction was upheld in the Court of Criminal Appeals. And this is nauseating to even ponder. She was convicted of raping a 2-year-old child. Miranda Smith is her name. She entered a plea of no contest to multiple sex crimes for an act this could be triggering, so be forewarned. I mean, it's already triggering. She taught the 2-year-old how to perform a particular sex act on her multiple times. And the Supreme Court said, nope, not a rape. They said, she's entered a no-contest plea and everything, so we can't just let her walk, but sounds to us like it's more like gross sexual imposition. Now, here's the problem. Gross sexual imposition could get her a max of 5 years in prison. She got a 10 to life out of the conviction because, among other things, she also videoed what she did and sent it off to her boyfriend. So her lawyers appealed the sentence and the conviction and said that even though she entered a plea, that since the act was conducted on her by the baby and she didn't actively do anything herself, that it could not fit within the statutory definition of rape in the state of Ohio. The Ohio Supreme Court saying that if somebody compels someone else to do something, that the person doing the compelling cannot be guilty of rape. Justice Patrick Fisher said, well, we can't do that. Instead, we've got to apply the law as written. This didn't sit well with Amy Dudley. She's the director of an accredited rape crisis center, the only one in Montgomery and Preble counties, Ohio. She directs the YWCA Dayton's Center for Survivors of Sexual Violence. And she said, if we can say that a 2-year-old was complicit in her sexual conduct, what does that say for older survivors? She noted, and I can verify this, research supports the fact that child sex crime survivors feel effects far into adulthood. and have to relive trauma or come to terms with it later in life, and that can create even more issues. Now, the Supreme Court judge said, well, of course, the fact that Smith's conduct doesn't fall under the rape statute doesn't mean that it ain't criminal. Gee, thanks, Judge. Thanks, Oodles. Now, the Ohio Prosecuting Attorneys Association said this was a despicable act against an innocent two-year-old child, and I think most Ohioans would be appalled to find out that it's not considered rape to cause a young child to engage in sexual conduct like this. So they're not going to retry the case, although the court just told the trial court to modify the conviction to gross sexual imposition and then resentence her and give her the 5 years instead of the 10 to life that she richly deserved. Y'all will. And let's check in with This Day in Insurrection Justice. This afternoon, Josiah Kenyon went in for his status conference before U.S. District Judge Carl J. Nichols. And during the hearing, Josiah Kenyon asked the court for permission to speak. The judge, doing what a judge should do, said, before you do, you might want to talk to that lawyer sitting there next to you. And young Josiah Kenyon, insurrectionist, barked back at his honor, I have a high enough IQ range not to screw up there, boss. And then he told the district judge that he wanted him to acknowledge that I have a right to defend myself if prison guards in D.C. try to assault me. Judge Nichols said, well, I'm not making any finding one way or another about that. Josiah Kenyon, otherwise known as Not Clarence Darrow, said, okie doke. So at the end, Judge Nichols looks at Josiah Kenyon and says, you got anything else you want to say, son? And Josiah Kenyon says, my wife and children homeless on the street. Have a wonderful day. Now, bear in mind, this isn't one of those guys who just walked into the Capitol, took a dump and played in it and then left. No, Josiah Kenyon stands accused of having tried to beat police with a table leg with a nail in it. He wore a Jack Skellington costume to the insurrection from The Nightmare Before Christmas. How many of these insurrectionists were wearing cosplay costumes? Have we had any furries yet? Well, I mean, does the QAnon shaman, the dude that looked like a refugee from a Ted Nugent cosplay convention, does he qualify as a furry? It was back in December when law enforcement caught up with him. He was hiding out in a travel trailer, had a bunch of guns. And he and his wife were charged with child endangerment because the trailer they were living in was unheated in the foothills of far Nevada. When you consider the sorts of folks that this all worked on this call to arms, this criminal conspiracy to overturn constitutional governance in the United States, you begin to get the idea that maybe they knew exactly who they wanted to show up in terms of sending out their performative stochastic terrorism. Because you want to talk about a Motley Crue, and I'm not talking about the 80s hair band. Well, this is that. Oh, and one more. How long has it been since we heard mention of young Stephen Goebbels? Miller. He kind of went to ground for a little while, didn't he? Well, he's back. Because they can always find a grift, and there'll always be money for the grift coming from the right wing. And so he apparently founded an outfit called America First Legal Foundation, which curiously goes by the initials AFL. Now, this is mischievous in its own right because, of course, for over 100 years, the AFL has stood for the American Federation of Labor. And it later merged with John L. Lewis's Congress of Industrial Organizations to create what we know in the modern era as the AFL-CIO, the AFL-CIO. But they're in much the same way as the cue balls leveraged the issue of child trafficking for their wild-eyed right-wing insurrectionist conspiracy theories. Well, AFL is the, like I said, America First Legal Foundation, which should be AFLF, but they somehow forgot the last F because, of course. And so they filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration, because of course. And the purpose of this lawsuit has to do with something that the Biden administration is trying to accomplish, that is, provide debt relief to family farmers, with particular emphasis on black and other minority farmers. And there are at least 13 suits challenging the constitutionality of the program that's being administered by Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. Stephen Miller has said, AFL is filing a lawsuit against the Biden administration to prevent it from administering programs created under the American Rescue Plan Act that discriminate against American farmers and ranchers based on the basis of race. No. It's trying to save family farmers, and some of it is earmarked for black and other minority farmers. And it attempts to right a wrong going all the way back to, no kidding, Brown versus Board of Education in 1954. Because after that decision, the U.S. Department of Agriculture began discriminating against black farmers more than they ever had before. So, and it persisted to this day. At the time of the signing of the American Rescue Plan Act, the USDA was rejecting 42% of black farmers for direct loans, when the rejection rate for white farmers was 9%. One black farmer uh,
wants to intervene because his application in 2021 was rejected and had to be resubmitted some 15 times. All this plan does is it says that if you are a socially disadvantaged farmer, you can get debt relief up to 120% of the debt, the value of the loan. It's for African Americans, Hispanics, Asian Americans, and Native Americans, all of whom Stephen Miller effing hates. Because not white. And of course they're trying to rig the playing field because they can't the right wing these miserable fascists can't stand a level playing field. So they forum shopped themselves to the courtroom of one Judge Reed O'Connor, a W appointee. Who sits on a court in Fort Worth, Texas, because of course. And they wanted to go with Reed O'Connor because Reed O'Connor, Jay, has a track record. And he's got a track record of going after, of supporting assaults on any legislation that benefits anybody except, white cishet males. Judge Reed O'Connor has ruled in the past against the Affordable Care Act, lost his ass on appeal, and he also ruled in a case and lost his ass again on appeal back during the Obama administration when the Obama administration said, listen, stop being so obsessed over who goes pee-pee and poo-poo where in schools, in which bathroom. The Obama administration entered a rule that said school kids should be able to go to the restroom in the restroom that matches their gender identity. So the little trans girls won't have to get the living shit stomped up out of them by transphobic, homophobic, bigot boys raised by transphobic, homophobic, bigot parents when they try to go to the bathroom. Well, O'Connor blocked that. Reed O'Connor did. And the Supreme Court later handed him his ass. But nonetheless, he is reliable for his consistent hatred of anyone, to use the phrase, of color. And so he's entered a preliminary injunction, he always does this, that says the USDA cannot help minority farmers during the pendency of the lawsuit. And then it'll go to trial and he'll find it to be unconstitutional. And then it'll have to be appealed. And meanwhile, the people who are harmed by this will just have to sit and suffer. Democrats in the House and Senate have tried to put aspects of this, knowing what was going on, into the Build Back Better plan, but we know where that is too, don't we? Imagine just going from day to day to day with that much racism, that much bigotry, that much phobia being the animated force of your very being. Yeah. Oh, and in regard to the cue balls in Dallas, Brother Deacon Asa, going back that way, said... I guess these maggots took Barack Hussein Obama's words to heart during that little White House correspondence dinner when he was busy burning Trump down to the ground. And I quote, now that Donald has seen my long-form birth certificate, he can get busy with things that really matter, like whether Bigfoot's real or what happened to Biggie and Tupac. Ouch. Yeah. And, Back to Tom Vilsack. Tom Balsack, says Ron in Raleigh. Known friend of black folk under Barack Obama, reappointed by Joe Biden, is fucking over black farmers once again. Just remember, there's no racism, so it must be something else. Well, in this case, he's not doing the fucking over. He was, he's actually trying to administer a program that provides relief, Ron. Or at least trying to correct it under presidential direction. The USDA under Nitwit Nero was not exactly a haven for debt relief for minority farmers. I mean, the lawsuit wouldn't exist were it not for the directive from the administration for this debt relief program that provides relief up to 120% of the loan itself. So you could get relief from the loan and then have a little something to, you know, to buy your seed corn or soybean seeds or what have you on. I mean, I'm pretty sure, I mean, I read that fairly closely. Maybe it should have been 150%, but it's 120, and that's more than. But no, it's Stephen Miller, and what's the other cat's name? Sid Vicious or something. He's the agriculture commissioner of Sid Miller, the agriculture commissioner of Texas. Yeah. And we'll go ahead and connect to the Friday on the Front Porch group. I hope. Let me just go ahead and type that in there too. If I could find the letter P A S E. Okay, it begins. Today in horse paste. By the way, the cue balls there in Dallas, they're among the ones who began the move toward pee drinking and dirt eating, in addition to drinking industrial bleach. But enter Senator Mark Steffen, who is an anesthesiologist from Hutchinson, Kansas. This week he announced that, yes, in fact, he's under investigation because he prescribed ivermectin to COVID-19 patients. And, you know, it doesn't do any good. Create some sense of controversy, Senator Dr. Steffen challenged the director of the University of Kansas Health System to a public debate and accused him of spreading propaganda. Among other things, he actually introduced a bill, from which he would financially benefit, by the way, in the Kansas Senate, to let himself and, you know, other wackadoodle doctors to use ivermectin to treat largely probably unvaxxed COVID-19 patients. And he also introduced, in the same bill, he wanted to use hydroxychloroquine, which also doesn't do a damn bit of good. And just like the maggot legislator in Arizona, he, of course, blamed the media. He kept a bill, Senate Bill 381, from being published in the Register of the Kansas Legislature till late on Monday night. So that was the bill that would let him prescribe ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. He kept it from being published till late Monday night. And then when the leadership said, well, no, that means we're going to have to postpone the hearing on it Tuesday morning, He said, well, you done give the media a 24-hour head start. And by the way, 60 cult members showed up for that hearing. And then they showed up again Wednesday. And it's referred to as model legislation, which means that Dr. Stephan didn't write it. Some right-wing, hard-case, dead-end chop shop did, because it has also been filed in Tennessee, and it puts a mandatory duty on pharmacists to fill prescriptions for ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, even though the said pharmacist may say, you know, this is going to do is make the victim shit himself to death. And the other purpose of the bill was to make sure nobody could be administratively punished for potentially poisoning their patients. Oh, remember, what state was it? I forget, where one doctor had their license suspended. Perhaps the same thing can happen with Dr. Horsepaste here. Ugh. So let's go over and check in the old holler tree and see what's going on. See what's going on there. Are you there, Sparky?
Yeah, I'm in the indoor man cave.
Indoor man cave. Probably considerably more comfortable than the outdoor man cave?
The bar stool's not my favorite anymore.
And that's in the outdoor man cave?
Yes, there's a bar out there.
Ah.
Just for that, with a computer.
Well, I wanted to ask you, based on the story last night, your county shares a border with Shasta County?
Yeah, and Butte County.
So the wackadoodles up there are gonna take over county supervision
in Shasta County.
I do, but I think that's what the story was.
Oh, probably. They got a lot of anti-vaxxers and maskers up there or something. I haven't paid much attention to it anymore.
Yeah, as long as they stay off your land, right?
Yeah, and it's not in my local paper that I noticed.
Huh.
Only thing I read in the local paper that makes me smile is the new marijuana dispensary ordinance is going to pass.
Yeah, for your county.
Well, for my town.
How far will you have to drive now? If once that passes,
no, yes, there's no dispensaries yet, but no more than 3 miles, I would say.
Good thing John Pritivo doesn't know that; he'd be crying.
Delivery too.
Oh, and delivery? Well,
yeah. It's supposed to be approved by March 17th.
And that'll be the end of any administrative red tape, and somebody can just open one up?
No, you have to have a state permit, be licensed. Have to get a county permit.
And they can't do that until this all passes, right?
Right, right.
Okay, so that's March. So you might actually be able to drive 3 miles to town and get some, goulash kush. By, like, June?
Well, we'll see. I got enough left from my last order from Redding that I don't need anything for a while. And I'm still doing sour diesel, I think.
All the flavors.
Oh, I also got some YOLO cherry cookies or something like that. I don't know.
Do you like the edibles?
Yes, I do.
How long does it take for you to know that, you know, they're doing their thing?
I only use them to go to sleep.
Oh, that's a nice idea.
You sleep like a baby when you take one of those.
A little midnight snack and just wake up fresh as a daisy.
Correct. No aches and pains.
Yay.
If it's 70 years old, I have aches and pains.
I think at 70 years old, and given the career you had, you're entitled to some aches and pains. I wish you didn't have them, but I think you're entitled to them.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you'll be pleased to know that I sent off my questionnaire to the West Virginia AFL CIO today for endorsement. I read my little essay that I wrote to Boss Man Wayne, and he was thrilled with it.
Do you have a local labor council?
Well, there was a question on there about, do you actually know who your local labor council is? And I said, yes, I do. And told him who it was. And but this was for the state. This is for the state AFL-CIO. They do all the decision making.
Oh, it don't work that way in California.
No, is it strictly local? I mean, I guess the locals probably have a voice, but yeah,
Representation, you got to be endorsed by the area labor council first.
Well, I imagine they're probably
it'll go to the California Labor Fed.
Since it's a contested primary, I imagine there won't be any endorsements until the general.
More than likely, yes. But they will have, you should see if they're going to have a speaker's night.
It would be nice. I don't know if they'll do that because this state is absolutely on fire with COVID. It makes retail politics rather difficult.
That's what we used to do all the time at our labor council.
Oh, I would love the chance to stand up and speak.
I was on the five counties central labor council for 15 years.
But let me see if I can find it. Where did I put it? Oh, I know where it is. Yeah, just so. Just to share. I wrote. To the best of my knowledge, none of the candidates running for the House seat in District 51 are union members. Be that as it may, as the daughter, granddaughter, and great-granddaughter of union coal miners, as well as my father's union membership as a silicon furnace operator, I learned from my youngest days the tremendous benefits of union membership. Unions confer not only a financial benefit, but also seek to safeguard the very lives of their members in the workplace. Beyond those two factors, unions perhaps most importantly lift up the human dignity of people who work for a living. These are unchallengeable articles of faith for me. It is an absolute fact that I would not exist were it not for unions. In the last few years, the current majority of the West Virginia legislature has waged a relentless war on working people and the unions that represent them. We desperately need legislators willing to say this out loud. We need to continuously decry the abolition of prevailing wage laws, as well as the imposition of odious laws that drive wages down, make workplaces less safe, and strip dignity from working people. West Virginia's future must be a union future. In the new industries growing as the 21st century advances, working people must have unions to make sure that the various billionaires and the corporations they control do not run roughshod over the people directly responsible for building their wealth. Individuals standing alone against such power cannot hope to do that. They must have the ability to join a union and speak with the single powerful voice that organization confers. The war the legislature is waging against working people is nothing short of a concerted effort to drag us back to the despicable days of payment and company scrip, iron-fisted limits on freedom of association, and deadly working conditions. I seek to add my voice to those so bold as to say, enough, no more. No other candidate running for this seat can say the same. Kind of proud of that.
Sounds good. You know what Biden did today, don't you?
What's that?
He issued an executive order requiring all government construction projects, they have project labor agreements on them.
Well, hallelujah. And of course, Davis Bacon is not dead, not yet. I remember when George W. Bush tried to ditch Davis Bacon over Katrina reconstruction and cleanup,
mm-hmm.
and he got stopped, if I recall correctly.
Well, we had a governor out here that tried to get rid of Davis Bacon. California's prevailing wage laws.
Oh, see, the Republicans here in West Virginia did do that.
Well, I don't know if you know who I'm talking about. It was Pete Wilson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember Pete.
So when Gray Davis got in, he made it harder than hell to change the prevailing wage laws. I worked under one project labor agreement in my career, I believe. That was the power plant down in Yuba City when I worked for Bechtel. It worked out great.
Hey, Robin.
Hey, Steve. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Hey, I wanted to clarify something about that farm program. The 120%. You know, fortunately or not, it probably does not give them more than what's owed. What 120% is proper, it's probably up to that in cases in which the amount owed is greater than the principal.
Yeah, where interest is piled up.
Yeah, interest is capitalized onto the principal. That's probably what that means. So in the most you could probably get is 120, but you're never going to get more than what's outstanding.
Yeah, it might not. It might. Yeah, it does. It might not cover seed. You know, like seed and feed.
Yeah, it's just going to be what's your outstanding balance on the debt. You know, is it up to 120% of what the original principal was? Then that's paid off. You know, this reminds me again. You know, I've been listening, really getting into British politics, and it's astonishing how much their system also screws working class and poor people. In many instances, even worse than ours. Their unemployment insurance scheme is dread. It's 100 times worse than ours. You know, I wish I could say, gee, I don't know why the poor always get screwed, or as my grandpa used to say, the rich take away and the poor get took. But sadly, that's time immemorial. I wonder if when Jesus said the poor you always have with, that's what he meant. And I wonder if that meant rather than, so you better take advantage of me being here, it was more of, sadly, the poor you're always going to have with you. Because you fuckers will never actually see everybody as brothers and sisters. You're always going to want to screw somebody.
Yeah. Somebody's forever going to be trying to get something over on somebody else.
Yeah. You know, and not to get into any kind of theological whatever. The Catholic view of Bible is way different. Way different than the Protestant view of Bible. You know what, I don't even want to get into that.
I understand.
But I did want to say, I mentioned the thing about celibate priests the other night. And by the way, celibate doesn't mean not having sex. Chastity is not having sex. Celibacy is not getting married.
Wait a minute, is that a loophole?
No, you can't get you can't get married. So celibacy is the rule, and you're not supposed to have sex outside of marriage.
Oh, so that means they get the ecclesiastical court would at least theoretically get to charge you with two things and not one if you get caught.
Yeah, if you got married. Well, if you get married, I think you're automatically depriestified. I don't know what it's called.
No, that's that's depriestilated.
Okay. Although that's not actually true. Once a priest, always a priest, generally speaking. Anyway, I'm against a married clergy because of, and I can, you know, it's interesting. In the Orthodox Church, it's not, as I remember, it's not a option to marry, it's a requirement. But, as I also recall, bishops can't be married. Anyway, that's a whole other issue. In Protestantism, the clergy in a particular, I'll use the term parish because I don't know what it's called in Protestant circles, I think has a much more intimate, personal relationship with parishioners than in Protestantism. And for instance, again, I'm not trying to evangelize anybody here. I'm just explaining why I said what I said. And particularly in the sacrament of confession, you don't want an instance in which a priest's wife comes to confess that she's cheating on her husband, or the person with whom he or she is cheating comes to confess. And I think for reasons like that, that's an example. I think it's, now, like I said, I have no problem with women priests. I think it'd be friggin' cool. But, you know, and certainly there's plenty of precedent for it in the early, in first century Christianity, that women often led, you know, what would be, they would probably be considered services now, but they were, you know, a lot of the times, as you know, they met in houses, and it centered around the meal. But that's you know, for me, it's not that I have any issue with marriage or whatever, but I think it's better for that particular reason not to. But women, I mean, I think it would be much easier for a person to confess to a woman anyway. Moving on. Oh, I am going to, I was just, one more thing on a completely different note. I think I'm going to actually do the GoFundMe I had mentioned a little bit ago. But I'm going to do them for various, I don't know if I'm going to do different GoFundMes or just do one GoFundMe. And I'm going to raise money to buy orange jumpsuits for, you know, gym shorts, for Matt Gaetz, and you know, raise the money, buy the jumpsuit, and then go to the go to their office on the Hill and take a camera and film it, and give it to him as a gift, and maybe give him like $5 or $10 spending money for them to go into prison with, maybe a pack of cigarettes. Would that be legal?
I'm not the lawyer here.
Well, I might be, but okay. But I know, but you know a lot about political whatever, donation or.
Well, but the thing is, that's the funny thing about PACs. PACs are such skeevy, sleazy things, because what usually happens with a PAC, and I'm sure it probably is happening in maggot world, is let's say you set up I Love Trump 2024 PAC.
Uh-huh.
Well, because you're a PAC, you can then raise money. And it's ostensibly for the support of him. But, you know, it costs money to administer things. And I'm not saying this as a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on the radio. But your PAC is going to need an executive director. And your executive director is going to need money to do the job, because PAC administering is a pain in the ass job. So what you'll probably do is you'll raise money for this stated purpose, and, you know, maybe, you know, you'll give out a pair of gym shorts or a soap on a rope or something like that. But most of your money you'll probably spend on your executive director, who might, you know, just be right. You.
Well, the only purpose of the thing would be to buy jumpsuits. So I don't really know what administrative anything there'd be.
Well, you know? I'm excited because Boss Man Wayne is serving as my campaign treasurer.
Excellent.
And he went out and got us a post office box.
Excellent.
And I'm working on some other things, like, you know, getting banking set up and all of that stuff. Because even a little race like this is going to be brutally expensive. I mean, you can spend $10,000 on signs alone. Then I need.
You can't just write a check.
No. Actually, sorry.
Well, you're forgetting who your most important campaign sugar daddy is.
Who?
George Soros. Hello. I'm sorry, I couldn't.
Yeah.
Did you get this? I sent you a message about. I contacted the guy I used.
Yeah, I did get that message.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. Did you get the one where I said he responded? And he basically said, I didn't realize he'd been gone that long.
Yeah, out of the game.
Yeah, he's completely out of it. He is a super duper smart guy. He's straight, and he's married and has a beautiful wife and kid. I think at least maybe more than one kid. But he was there, like, I think he was their political director.
Wow.
He did, you know, they have like policy, they have policy writers who like write, you know, this, that, and whatever. And I had an old roommate who was a director at what used to be called the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. I think it's only called the Task Force now, if it even exists still. And I, you know what, this is a bad thing about going off Facebook. We were connected on Facebook, and I don't even know how to get in touch with the guy anymore. But I was going to, and he knew, he had some contact, and that was a million years ago too, but I think he still kind of kept in touch with people. But he knew a couple of the really, 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 like, he knew Kate Clinton. I don't know if you know who Kate Clinton is. She was a lesbian comedian, or a comedian who happened to be lesbian, who did a lot of, she was, if you ever look her up sometimes, she did a lot of stuff, LGBT stuff, with HRC and NGLTF. Her partner, girlfriend, maybe wife now, I don't know, was named Irvashi Vaid, who was another, I think she ran the policy arm of NGLTF. She worked at the Ford Foundation doing policy writing fairly recently. I'll continue to try to think of people that it's just been, you know, I've been out of politics so long that, you know, and you know it too, is that politics, a lot of it has to do with people get into positions, particularly on the Hill and in the parties, where it's to get in, build your Rolodex, and get out, and then go to write policy and stuff like that. But I'm going to see, you know, some of the trans folks in particular that I'm connected to here in New York, See if it would be great if you could somehow connect with on more than a cursory basis with somebody at HRC or whatever. Does West Virginia have an HRC?
We've got Fairness WV, and I've given them a heads up. I have not heard back.
Okay, because it would be nice if you could get, if they had a, because I have a feeling that if they heard that you were the first and only trans woman to run, I have a feeling they would send some cash your way, or at least, and may even send out, they have like a newsletter sent out, hey, notable people. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think,
I'm hesitant to do that on this air.
No, I understand. Absolutely not. I'm just talking about it I need to follow my own rule. Maybe that's something you and I should talk about offline if we want to get into real details on it.
But primarily, I'm just excited to actually be beginning the process.
Well, you know what, to be honest with you, this is you beginning visibility. A lot of times in your first campaign, it's about, sadly to say, a lot of times, not necessarily the case, it's about name recognition. It's about impressing the party and constituents the first time. And whether that leads to running again and winning or, if you don't get elected, running again and winning, or, being able to make particular inroads into the party within West Virginia and more so into government there. Because once once you run, and look, like you've talked about, it's not going to be easy for you. You're gonna be in a street fight because you're gonna get some ugliness, but you're gonna have serious street cred, and you can leverage that in your favor down the road. Even. And I'm talking too much, so I'm gonna stop.
No, it's okay. I'm just looking forward to talking about the issues because things like imposing right to work for less, things like destroying prevailing wage so that the people who build the infrastructure on government money have to do so at, crummy wages. Stuff's unacceptable.
And it strikes me as important as something like, for instance, infrastructure is. Whether infrastructure is roads or bridges or schools or broadband or modernizing the grid, the electrical grid, why would you want? I don't know if you remember, there was a saying, I don't know who said it, but they were talking about the space shuttle program, and it was an astronaut.
Oh, it's John Glenn. Glenn said, he said, sitting there on top of all that dynamite, it's a sobering thought to realize that everything on that rocket was built by the lowest lowest bidder.
Yeah. So.
But actually, in all truth, and it was Boss Man Wayne who taught me this. People think lowest bidder is carved in stone, but at least in some instances, the language reads lowest responsible bidder.
Or it'll say lowest, or it'll say best value.
But lowest responsible bidder is far different from lowest bidder.
Lowest bidder, right? Or best value. I mean, I've had those before. When I did government contracting, we did those too, where we weren't necessarily the lowest, but we had the most capability going in, and gave the government the best value, best bang for the buck, so to speak. But it just strikes me that the notion of I get cost should be a factor, but it should never be the factor. That, and on a completely different note regarding healthcare, for instance, when I hear people talk about as a virtue that, you know, single payer is cheaper. Well, I'm not so sure that should be a selling point. I think the selling point should be, yeah, we might pay a little bit more, we might not, but everybody's going to be able to get it.
Well, I mean, a good example is a scam that the Republicans ran for years in this state. So they had this thing where they said, well, you know what? If we get rid of prevailing wage, we can build 3 schools for the price of 1. And it, of course, was all blue smoke and mirrors. It was a complete fraud. And, you know, does any parent really want their kids going to school in a building that might crumble to the ground because it was built by low wage workers with crummy materials?
I was just going to say, yeah. I mean, we have an obsession in this country with being cheap, or being not cheap but inexpensive, or inexpensive is always better, or cheaper is always better. And look, you do get what you pay for.
Truth.
So, how are you doing, by the way?
Very busy. Very busy.
I can't imagine why.
And tired. And eager to see the sunshine and feel warmth upon my skin. But I dare not hasten that along too much because I have basically 3 months to run a campaign that right now is, you know, unfunded.
And just starting.
But it's still exciting. And it's cool to have made history. And it would be even cooler still to be my party's first nominee as a trans woman, trans person. And coolest of all to be the first to take that seat.
And promise me one thing, that sometime on the campaign trail, you will wear that same outfit you wore when you went and registered.
Well, okay.
Yeah, you're definitely an earth color person.
Oh, I love my pastels.
I understand, but that was first class. I'm like, oh, look at her.
Now.
Yeah, I can appreciate. I can window shop. I ain't got to buy. But no, it looked great. You looked great. It was cooler than Jesus proud moment, and I was happier than a pig in shit for you.
It just tickles me pink. Like a pig. Pigs are pink, like, right?
Yep. I'm talking entirely too much. So whoever's out there, start talking, because I'm going on mute.
Okay. Anybody? Bueller? Hey, let me bring in Dave in the Blind.
Well,
hey, Dave. Okay, so I just wanted to make sure Dave's there. Somebody was about to talk. Go.
Yeah, I just posted a thing in the chat that the licensed cannabis growers in Oregon reported growing 11.1 million pounds of trimmed weed. There is no market for 11 million pounds of trimmed weed in Oregon, and growers are taking it in the shorts again, because we can't interstate ship.
Damn.
It's, you know, the kid hasn't been able to sell hardly anything of what he grew this year, so he's keeping it in the freezer because he usually gets calls in March and April when the glut isn't quite there, and by that time he's normally sold out, so he's sitting on it. I think he said he's got something like 100 pounds, and it's just not moving. Because the retail buyer is paying the same high price, and it's the tax man and the shops that are taking all the money. It's amazing. Supply and demand, and yet the government's got so many restrictions that there isn't even really any supply. I mean, you know, the demand's there, but the oversupply is such that because of the regulations, it's totally detrimental. The other one I'd like to hit on just a little bit, you were talking about the loan forgiveness to farmers and PPP loans and all the rest of that.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that it's just fine for the government to forgive loans to businesses and forgive loans to farmers, but as soon as you talk about making retroactive subsidies to higher education, which loan forgiveness would be, all of a sudden that's a bad thing because, well, they took out the loan, so they should have to pay it back. Well, what about those businesses that took out the loans to try and keep their store open while the...
That's different.
Yeah, and it pisses me off. So, anyhow. And I got my artichokes weeded out and my strawberries all clipped off and weeded out and pulled the last of the carrots and the beets and getting that garden bed ready for another planting. And things are starting to move towards spring and start getting involved with making things grow up out of the dirt. So, anyhow, I just stepped in because there was a dead space.
Thank you for your public service, Roger. I appreciate that.
I'm back now.
Okay, Dave in the Blind, are you there? Oh, Dave. Dave's
not here.
Oh no, he's on the stress line.
Well, no, I can't talk about his girlfriend.
I
didn't
say that. You were going, Dave.
Yeah, it's like 2001. I'm sorry, Dave.
So, Sparky, what about your girlfriends?
Oh, Jeremy?
Huh? What about my girlfriends?
Well, we'll get this sorted out in a minute. Go, Sparky.
Oh, I had to take a call. One of my girlfriends is having problems with a new smartphone she just got. Well, like.
And you're the tech desk now?
Kind of.
the guy who wouldn't have a smartphone for 10 years or more, you know, ever.
Well, now I have one because I inherited one. I have like a year left on the contract.
Is it an Android or an iPhone?
Android. We determined her service was cutting in and out.
Ah.
She lives in Oregon, so it's out in the sticks in Oregon, so it might be that.
Oh, long-distance relationship.
Yeah, I got two in Reno and one in Oregon.
Lord God, you're turning into a Grateful Dead song.
Oh, there's a ludicrous song about that, too.
My phone here in Oregon, too. Inside the house now, it doesn't want to connect. I got to go walk outside the front door or walk out into the patio. But inside the house, it doesn't want to. And I think what they're doing is they're shifting towers around and making some dead spaces.
Again. My hangout on Gmail, and she just blipped again.
Now, I think they're fucking with the cell phone towers here in Oregon, something fierce.
Okay, I'll let her know.
Because I used to have, like, all five bars sitting at the dining room table. Now I only have two. Now, that's Eugene. Now, she's down in the sticks outside of Grants Pass. God knows what's going on down there.
She's north of Klamath Falls.
Well, that's southern Oregon. I'm surprised you could find somebody with progressive viewpoints living down in that neck of the woods. Or maybe she doesn't have progressive viewpoints. I don't know. But
she's a moderate in between. Now, I just met a progressive in Reno, though.
But anybody who even is middle of the road, just routine DLC Democrat down in the Grants Pass area is considered a commie.
No, what's the line from what's the line from Friend of the Devil? Got a wife in Chino, babe, and one in Cherokee. First one says she's got my child, but it don't look like me. Set out running, but I take my time. Friend of the Devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight. I just might. Yeah, what is that? That's what I meant.
Yeah, but I don't have a wife, you know.
Yeah, work with the metaphor, Sparky.
Okay.
I think the girlfriend Sparky's collected right now probably aren't capable of being a mother anymore.
Well, let's not. I don't think we don't prejudge here. Okay.
Oh, shit, Roger, what did you say that for?
Well, I know how old you are. I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to start dating.
You would think I want a kid at 70 years old?
No, but I don't think I'd want to be starting to date some girl in her 20s or 30s at my age now.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
welcome to Dateline.
Roger, I don't know why you started that.
Hey, Jeremy, you had something to say.
Yeah, we're going strong. We have 15 inches so far, and still coming down heavy. Might end by 10.
Yeah, nothing really happening here. We might actually get the edge of this thing and dodge another one.
I know a lot of southern Vermont stayed rain most of the night, but we got snow from about 10 a.m. yesterday right through today.
So wait a second, not the snowmobile. You have to say it to Godzilla from Wasilla Way. You'll be out in your snow machine tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Or are you going to do some nighttime snow machining?
No, and I'm going to let the groomers or snowcats, if they want to say it, do their thing and pack this snow down so there's trails. Right now it'd be kind of hard with 18 inches and no real clear trails.
Yeah, it blew my mind when I was up in northern Wisconsin at one time in the depths of winter. It's February-ish, and there was a little tavern there, you know, Friday fish fry and all that kind of stuff, and it was explained to me that the snowmobile packs just went from bar to bar.
That happens here too. People drink on the trails and throw their bottles around and ruin it for everybody. I don't understand why people think that a road's any different than an icy pathway through the woods.
Well, the same. I mean, it's the same phenomenon with boats. Well, I can't drive on the roads, but you know, I can handle this boat with a 1.75 under my belt. No, you can't.
I mean, not that I'm giving it any positivity, but at least in a vehicle, you have some armor around you. If you hit a tree, but on a snowmobile, you hit a tree, you're pretty much fucked even wearing a helmet. That's normally what kills people with the trees.
Vicious, the trees.
Yeah, they just jump out at you.
Well,
kills a lot of skiers, too.
True.
Took out Sonny Bono. Too.
Steve, Jordan, stand you here?
Of course.
There's Steve. Steve!
It's throbbing. What's shaking?
Oh, just me.
Glad to hear it.
Rockin' Robin. Tweet.
Work. Robin, did I hear you say earlier that we're in a hell of a state because one in three of us are in a cult? I think it's higher than that.
Do you really?
Yeah. If you take into consideration organized religions, and particularly Christianity, I mean, let's look at this from an intellectual level. They celebrate torture and sacrifice, okay? I don't want any part of that, do you?
I'm very much an existentialist where that's concerned. You caught me with a mouthful of hush puppy.
And this ought to strike home with you. They degrade woman with the original sin theory.
Oh, that's all just taken as read. The hair covering, the hat wearing, you know. Ugh.
That Steve was talking about women in the priesthood, that's why I don't think it'll ever happen. They can't hold power positions.
Hold on.
Well, they do bleed from whatever.
Hold on just a second, though. Okay, it's one thing to say women can't be priests, true, currently. But to say women don't hold power positions, you've clearly never met a German, Irish, or Polish nun.
The Mother Superior variety.
Oh, shit.
Well, yeah, but they're delegated by sex, though, Steve, by your own admission.
No, I understand. I don't know. Maybe I just got.
There'll never be a woman. Well, no, Pope. Steve. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah. Well, Steve's. Let me point this out. Notice what I did there, Steve's.
Well, you know, you haven't referred to us as the fraternity of Steve's.
Yeah. All right, fraternity boys. Consider this, and this came to me from a dear friend of mine who is actually a pagan. And she said she always, and they were visiting, I think maybe they were in Slovenia or Croatia or somewhere like that. And they went to an ancient abbey or nunnery, or, you know. She got, yeah, get thee to a nunnery, go. But she pointed out to me, and I thought it a fascinating thing, she said, I always thought if I had lived in the Middle Ages, I would have wanted to have been a nun. And again, this beautiful woman is a pagan. And I mean beautiful soul, beautiful, beautiful, just everything about her is beautiful. And I said, "What did you just say?" And I went right down that road, you know, the sexism, the misogyny. She goes, No. She said, in the Middle Ages, the freest women on the European continent were nuns and abbesses and various sisterhoods because they were actually free, for the most part, of interference from male domination. She said, you know, could have gotten up, gone to prayers, gone back to my cell or hung out in the garden or whatever, worked on my Bayeux tapestry or, you know, what have you. And there's really no men to screw with you, literally. And there's probably a compelling argument that the freest women in dark and Middle Ages Europe were nuns. And, you know, one of the most fascinating stories coming out of the colonization of Mexico is the mystic poet Sor Juana, and her story is just amazing. It's worth looking into. And I guess she was a mixed ethnicity, you know, part conquistador and part indigenous population. But her poetry is exquisite.
What's her, can you email me what her name is so I can
just look
it?
Up Sor, S-O-R, Juana, J-U-A-N-A. I mean, hell, she's been on the Mexican money. By the way, Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, online dating is new to us old folk, Robin. Tell the fellas to play nice. I know.
I'll say one last thing about the nun thing. And the reason I said what I said to Steve is all I know is that any church I've ever been in, if the pastor is honest, he'll acknowledge who really runs things.
Yeah, but that's that whole power behind the throne thing. When ultimately it's the throne that matters.
We'll just have to agree to disagree.
I mean, remember
Remember on the chessboard, the king just sort of sits there.
He kind of sits there. He can only go one step at a time.
The queen can fly. The queen can fly around and raise hell.
King is impotent.
Who is that?
This is Joey.
Hey, Joey, what's up?
The king is impotent. He can't do shit.
How are you feeling, my friend?
Well, as long as I don't have to think, I'm in good shape.
Brain fog that bad?
It's really at times is terrible. I go to Google something and I can't remember what the hell I was Googling.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, if you wouldn't mind describing it for us, if it's not triggering or traumatic or anything, because we've all read about it, but...
No, you just feel like you're in a hungover, I guess, is the best way to describe it. I just feel like you're in a haze, and you first wake up, and you're groggy, and you don't have your cup of coffee or whatever. This goes on all day long.
And so did you take leave or whatever, or what did you do?
Yeah, well, I don't.
Again, not trying to get too personal.
No, I don't qualify for FMLA, but I did take leave, and the company said when you feel okay, you know, your job will be here. So that's good news. But in the meantime, you know, you can't earn an income sitting at home.
No, well, that's true. That's true. Oh, and since we've probably got a bunch of football fans in the conversation, okay, the Washington Commanders, go. I mean, I personally am just looking forward to referring to them as, you know, the Commies took it on the chin again this weekend.
That's all just, over Twitter now, too.
Hashtag Commies.
It strikes me as such the most...
I listened to a sports show every morning. They were talking about it's going to become the Commies.
Pat McAfee?
Yes.
Mountaineer punter.
Yes, I know. He's got a West Virginia helmet sitting on his desk.
Damn straight. I wonder if he's rooting for the Bengals because of... Quentin Spain. Dude's a stud.
I don't know, but I think he just mentioned his name.
Like, what, 6'6 and 330, and he's a guard?
What do you think is going to happen in the Super Bowl?
you want the macro or the micro?
Well, who do you think is going to win? I don't know. I don't watch football enough to know the macro. So, or to know the micro.
Well, I mean, the micro is I may or may not watch, but I think the Bengals, I want the Bengals to win, so I think the Bengals have a better chance if I don't watch.
Oh, you're like me. I can't tell you how many times I'll turn on the Reds in the third or fourth inning and they're down 5-0. And I think, damn, if I'd have been listening, you know, that whole butterfly effect thing, they wouldn't be behind.
Yeah. No, they'd probably be in the middle of a no hitter.
Yep.
Yeah, but if you watched the game last week with the Bengals, you'd think they were going to get blown away. And then the Chiefs come out in the second half and lay the eggs and the Bengals caught fire.
Their defense has been really good. At least it was very good in the second half.
Different defense.
Yeah, they played man-to-man defense.
And they dropped 8 and only rushed 3.
And it's almost like then the Chiefs didn't do any adjustments. That's what I didn't quite... Well,
maybe they felt like they wouldn't have to because Pat Mahomes would just make a miracle and that would be, you know, that would be that. Let me try the stress line again. By the way, we are 2/3 of the way through the program. We got a 1,100. Well, no, it's a $1,099 hole. There's a $100 challenge, the Fuck Winter Challenge, courtesy of Rico, in the frozen but still somehow quiescent Berg. And
We're at zero on that. We got $10 of Joey's challenge knocked out, courtesy of Ralph's, and Ralph's is all by herself this evening, in terms of supporting the program. And knowing how long I'm going to be gone, week after next, this is frightening.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, put me in for $100. I'll meet that challenge.
Thank you. Okay, so Rico's challenge is met.
I'm driving home from work. I'll do the.
That's fantastic.
PayPal later, but yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That's a lifesaver. So that means that we are now down to $10.99. It's $7.99. Thank you, Kevin. And we got $15 worth of challenge money, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe, on the table. And if we can somehow scare up a miracle, that would be fantastic. Let me bounce over to the stress line. Is that Ken? Are you there?
Aloha, how's it going?
Good. Aloha.
Just called. Y'all talking about the religion stuff. Has anybody watched a series called Midnight Mass?
I heard about that, but I didn't. I have not watched it.
Well, it's about a preacher who comes back to his flock, and he thinks he's seen an angel, but it turns out to be a vampire. And it's really dogmatic in the Catholic religion. It's really heavy religious, and it was hard to sit through if you're an atheist, just because it's so just crap. But it was so, this one lady, such a religious zealot in it, and she gets it in the end. It just, oh man, she really, that type of person that just holier than thou, nobody's better than they are. And it's like even the preacher finally confronts her and says, that's not God's way. It's not a competition. It's just like she's always one of those that just puts everybody down. It was like Carrie's mom, for the movie Carrie, just super, super religious zealot. Oh, it was a weird series. It was hard to watch because of that.
Well, I'll have to check that out. It's called Midnight Mass.
It's on Netflix.
Now, we did start last night. Annette and I started Resident Alien, and we're like three episodes in, and I got to say it's pretty zany. The relationship between Alan Tudyk and the little kid, no spoilers, is absolutely hilarious.
Has anybody watched New Amsterdam?
No. You want to plot it out for us?
Good series, yeah. It's about a New Amsterdam, of course, is New York City, or New York City was originally called, and now New Amsterdam has a modern-day hospital that cares about people, indigent people, and it's kind of a Pollyannish theme, but it's really, I'm enjoying it very much. What happened?
I don't know. This is one of those inexplicable.
Hey, everyone. I need to step off. Sorry about that. I have to actually make a phone call real quick. I hope it could go for quite a while. If I don't come back, all my best to everybody. Have a very good and safe weekend for everybody who is in the path of the big storm. I'm thankfully not. Please stay safe and stay warm, and make sure you get plenty of water, milk, and bread.
Or pizza.
Yeah, because French toast is the official meal of blizzards. I was just thrilled today because I found a box of freaking saltines.
In the store or at home?
No, in the store. Oh, at home. Jeez.
I don't know. I thought you. I don't know. I mean, Is there that big of a shortage on saltines?
Yeah, there's a saltine shortage, and there's a disposable coffee cup shortage. You know, the ones, the nice ones with the lid, so, like, you know, you don't get...
Yeah.
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 I haven't seen any of those in a couple of months.
Okay. I don't know. There's plenty of crackers in the Republican Party.
Ooh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Ramen, if you need shit, you got to tell me. Because there's no shortages here. I don't know why, but there's not.
No, I mean, mostly I just like to have them around for, you know, when I have a cup of decaf.
Right. When the spirit moves you to have some coffee, I get it.
Or something that tastes like coffee, because everybody always gives me crap when I say decaf.
I don't. Well, you got. I call it Bustelo, but you call it Bustelo. I don't know.
Well, see, that's because I don't know. Maybe one L, and maybe with one L, it's Bustelo.
It is Bustelo. Any Puerto Rican I've ever known called it Bustelo.
Well, then I will rely on the expertise of any Puerto Rican you've ever known.
Because it's from Puerto Rico, but I think that's particularly for the money. That's among the best tasting coffee you're going to find.
Well, yeah, it is. And I mean, I was absolutely thrilled when I saw it in decaf form, because my favorite means of making these days is I've got this. It's a one-off, not one-off, but it's a single serve, 16-ounce French press. And it's by a company called Bobble, and it's called the Bobble Pressa, P-R-E-S-S-E. And it's insulated and stainless steel lined, and the press is stainless steel, and you put your water and your coffee in there, and I usually use like 2-level scoops of the Cafe Bustelo decaf, because it has to be strong or else it's just yuck, decaf.
Yep, Bustelo has to be strong, period.
So, you know, stir it around, let it sit, and you know, 5 minutes later, come back, take the little silicone lid off, press it, put the lid back on, and, you know, then I froth my milk, my half and half, and I've got a beautiful little breve, then, you know, that's to, you know, to go, or, you know, if I'm just sitting around the house or whatever. I did it. Somebody had to. Yeah, thanks, Brendan. Did you say decaf? Heresy. Honey, you don't want to see me on caffeine. I'm a mess. Caffeine makes me feel awful. Every now and then, I just slowly try to titrate a little more caffeine back into it. But, no, it'll get me all jangled. And then, you know, because remember, I abused caffeine in a big way when I would do the midnight shift at the radio station or CNN or whatever. You know, I was a 3-pot-a-night girl, and it was, you know,
3 pots?
Pots, yes. You got to be peppy in that 3 a.m. hour.
I mean, you're lucky you have red blood.
In the late 90s, when it finally got to the point where I couldn't handle caffeine anymore, I found out in a big way, you know, there's nothing like having blood pressure like 260 over 130. And that's just hypersensitivity to caffeine.
I gave a coffee after my dad passed away.
Whoa. Anywho, everyone have a wonderful weekend. I got to get making this phone call.
You too. Say hi to Gotham for us.
I shall. You all say hi to wherever you are, and go Bengals. I know it's not till next weekend, but...
Yeah. We can start now, sure.
Yes.
Matt in San Francisco, the great saltine shortage ranks up there with the potato famine. I can't find my sugar-free popsicles. So far, no one's been hurt, but I can't guarantee that streak will continue. I know! And it's the sugar-free people who are taking it on the chin. Gone is my caffeine-free Dr. Pepper. Sugar-free, caffeine-free Dr. Pepper. Gone is my sugar-free, caffeine-free Mountain Dew. Gone is my caffeine-free or Coke Zero. Gone is my Fresca. Oh, and I'm hot about that. I think the Coca-Cola company lost the recipe or something. I've got one you know, like what used to be 16-ounce bottle of Fresca left, and I'm saving it for a special occasion. That's where we are now.
Shit, they haven't sold Fresca on the West Coast since I don't know when.
Well, it was no problem to get it here, and then gone. My my sugar-free Orange Crush, gone. And that really sucks, because the only other sugar-free orange pop is Sunkist. And there it is, caffeine. 27 milligrams per 16.9 fluid ounces. I knock out a I knock out a bottle of Diet Sunkist. Oh, hell, I might as well be on coffee. And by the way, Jack is in Shreveport's experiencing it too. Saltines, the regular shelves for any brand of saltines have been bare, but I happened to spot an end of the aisle stack of one brand about a week ago, and I got some more from it a couple of days ago. Maybe it's not a preferred brand, but I think people just haven't seen it either. Load up. Yeah, I mean, I'm a cheapskate. I admit it, I buy the store brand, be it Kroger or Wiggling Pig or. But nope. Now if I see Zest, I don't like premium saltines. But if I see Zestas or Sunshine brand, by God, I'm buying them.
Oh, have you tried microdosing caffeine? That's what I do. Karen makes it strong. Your hair will stand up. I take one shot of that and pour it in peppermint tea, and it lights me up. But it's not too much, you know.
That's what I'm saying. You know, instance, the Diet Orange Sunkist. You know, if I open one of those, let's say tonight, and I have two sips out of the bottle, I'll still be drinking on that by Titanic Tuesday.
Wow.
Yeah, and I love Diet Dr. Pepper. But they quit making the caffeine-free Diet Dr. Pepper, which just...
My doctor's telling me it's something genetic. 1 in 20 have this affliction, Robin, and I'm one of them, where we're hypersensitive to caffeine, and it sounds like you are, too. Yeah.
Well, I got that way.
So you used to be able to just chug it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was drinking those three pots over the course of the midnight shift because the first two pots weren't doing anything. It's like the hard lesson you learn with gummies.
Wonder if you triggered something, you know, in your anatomy. Or I don't.
Yeah,
know.
I think I just oversaturated.
Yep. Flipped a switch of sorts.
Yeah. Oh, here's an interesting story. The Supreme Court of the state of North Carolina, of all places, has ruled that the Republicans illegally skewed their political maps, and have told the state to make new ones. Oh, you mean we skewed it so bad you noticed? Well, that means we got more skewing to do. Skew you! Helen, Randy Radar says, premium saltines go rancid really quickly. Ooh, rancid saltines, that's a band name. And I've got the vintage tins.
It's a great band name, though.
Oh, yeah. And welcome to the stage now. The Rancid Saltines with their hit Mold on the Cracker. Give a girl a break. Oh, by the way, going back to Steve and the orange jumpsuits pack. Our dear sister Jude in the Great Northwest said a suggestion to hand deliver to the Capitol, if this is your intention, or maybe just a joke, yet I offer this. Back during W's administration, I called into the Justice Department and reached the Office of Professional Responsibility. You mean they had one then? It fails me, the specifics, but more than likely it may have been related to the torture memos and Jay Bibee. A professionally resonating woman transferred me to one of the attorney's phones. He was not available, so I left a message on the recorder. Can you imagine what my limbic system was flooding? A lot. About 2 weeks later, on a Sunday, I received a telephone call from the same lawyer. I was shocked. There was no definitive answer that I remember, as they were still in the process of reviewing. What I do remember, though, as if it was last week, was, number one, his response in calling me back. Number two, on a Sunday, he voices, I had some work to catch up on, heard your message, and wanted to follow through. We work for the people, and I needed to follow up with you. Months later, after I'd sent a handwritten letter thanking him for his time, I reconnected to hear if any decision had been rendered. Robin, dear, I was instantly transferred to him, and he answered. Here's why I'm writing. Mr. whatever his name was so excited about receiving my handwritten letter, as it had gone through chemical screening at Quantico, rendering my average paper as fragile, thin parchment paper. It was delightful listening to him, especially to know he shared with everyone in that office, who all found this, I guess, as an anomaly. And, Steve, if it's a joke, I still want to thank you for triggering such a memory for me regarding doing what we are nudged to do. Enjoy the front porch, you all. Peace, Jude. Well, thank you, Jude. Thank you so much. You know, it's amazing what can happen when we decide to shock the universe, I guess. Oh, and Steve did send this along earlier. We've talked a good bit about Glenn Youngkin, the stealth maggot governor of Virginia. Well, he's just had a temporary restraining order handed to him, telling him that he cannot enforce his mask optional executive order for schools in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And that means that the 7 school boards who sued to stop it can continue to require masks so that the maggots can't, you know, try to kill school personnel. Arlington Circuit Court Judge Luis de Mateo wrote, "Having addressed all aspects of whether a temporary restraining order should issue, the court concludes that the school board's motion for a temporary restraining order with regard to optional masking of children should be granted." So, good. Maybe children have a little bit better chance now. And maybe Virginia has a little better chance of getting this under control. You know, I saw I saw where Moscow Mitch McConnell, the most, speaking of rancid human being ever to come out of Colbert County, Alabama, I saw where he said, you know, the time has come for us to learn to live with COVID. I'm guessing maybe Joey doesn't agree. And, you know, it's not so much the living with COVID part. It's the other alternative. But, you know, Moscow Mitch, he can limit his contact. As long as he doesn't go down to the Senate dining room and sit there with the barking and grunting and hooting maggot brigade with their masks off eating their Senate bean soup, he should be okay.
Well, they're all vaccinated and boosted.
Sure they are.
Don't knock that Senate Navy bean soup. It tastes good.
Well, I didn't say anything about it, Roger. I said they're all sitting there LARPing it right up like it's free or something. I've had it, too.
I got taken to lunch one time in that Senate dining room. Just once.
No, I've had dinner. I've had lunch there a couple of times. We're kind of quiet this evening.
I got a new story from Florida, if you want it.
Do please.
Orange County Sheriff's Office, this is a tweet, arrested three. It shows the pictures of them. These three men arrested in connection with a physical altercation during a neo-Nazi demonstration on 129. Joshua Terrell, Bert Colici, charged with battery with a hate crime enhancement, and Jason Brown for grand theft. One of the guys got face tattoos. Looks pretty tore back.
Well, yeah, those are the Nazi rallies where they hollered the blood libel, and it's also the Nazi rallies where the spokeswoman for Rona death sentence said, "How do we know they were really Nazis after all?" Well, Nazis tend to yell Nazi slogans, and these Nazis were yelling Nazi slogans, so I'd say it's a good guess.
Weren't they flying Nazi flags, too?
Yes, they were.
That's a dead giveaway.
But she's not sure. That might have been, that might have been secret stealth liberals. You know, just like January 6th was secretly done by Antifa and BLM in whiteface. These
Did
people.
You think it was funny that Ron DeSantis couldn't come out and decry the Nazis and say.
Well, of course he couldn't. They're why he's governor.
Well, the Nazis helped elect him, right?
Right. The robocalls. But here's a fun one. I like this one a lot. The House J6 Committee. They've got evidence in hand now that show that Nitwit Nero and Jim Jacket Off Jordan had a nice little phone call on January the 6th. The CNN report says, two sources who have reviewed the call records tell CNN that Trump spoke on the phone at the White House residence with Jordan for 10 minutes on the morning of January 6th. And that afternoon, Jim Jacket Off Jordan took to the House floor to object to the certification of the Electoral College win by Joe Biden. Acting under orders. And, of course, he's been a little bit squishy, Jim Jacket Off Jordan has. I talked to the president a number of times that day, but I don't remember the times. Here, let us refresh your recollection. Morning of January 6th, according to White House records, 10 minutes, and the National Archives turned those records over to the January 6th committee. Oops.
And they're going to turn over Pence's records, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we have another story of... Ron in Raleigh says, I just finished off a pot of the Senate Navy bean soup. It truly is delicious. Yeah, it's yummy. That's why I figure the maggot caucus is down there slurping away. No, it's yummy. You know, Navy beans, white beans.
What is this? This recipes online?
I don't know where Ron got it, but probably, yeah. Let's check in with... Richard Barnard, he showed up for his sentencing today in federal court. He pleaded guilty back in 2020 to a Class B misdemeanor of parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building. And remember, Rona Romney McDaniel, niece of Bishop Willard Romney, and Bishop Willard Romney said, oh, she was wrong to say that. Bishop Willard decried it, but she said that the January 6th insurrection was a legitimate political protest. Yeah. Well, one of the people who participated in that legitimate political protest was Richard Barnard. Like I said, showed up today to get sentenced for his parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building charge. And, of course, he addressed the court. And I would never tempt a federal judge this way, but nonetheless, he did. He said, I lost a six-figure job, and my credit rating's ruined, and my retirement savings are gone. Because he decided to participate in an insurrection against constitutional governance and the seat of that constitutional governance and the Constitution itself. And he actually looked at the judge and said, there's nothing the court can do to me that'll come even close to what I've lost. He participated in the insurrection along with his fellow brother Marine Corps veteran Jeffrey Witcher, who went on camera to say, I just broke into the White House. And this was the guy who didn't know he was in the White House or the Capitol or the men's room at Waffle House.
And he was Marine.
Yeah.
Some of the Marines aren't too bright.
Don't say that. You'll get hate mail from our buddy Mark in Florida.
I said some.
Some. Okay. Fox News style manual. Curiously, the account here doesn't say what kind of sentence that he got.
Speaking of sentencing, did you see where Michael Avenatti got convicted today?
Yep.
Senator okay, Ron Johnson
found the recipe.
Senator Ron Johnson held a hearing a couple of days ago on the COVID pandemic, and he brought in a nurse from Florida who spewed some of the most ungodly misinformation and presented it as factual. And one of the things that she said was the number of people who have died that have been given ivermectin. Well, shit, some people died with ivermectin, but how many of them died without ivermectin? I mean, it was just an absolutely garbage, unscientific, from this lady who proclaimed herself to be a nurse. And if you're interested, I mean, I'm sure you can find it. It's out there. It's a YouTube number. But it was just appalling. My maggot friend on Facebook posted it. And I watched it just because I tried to
group with the quack doctors.
Yeah. Unbelievable that the Senate would bring, well, of course, senators being what they are, some of them, to bring in this godly, unscientific bullshit.
How did he hold the meeting? He's not a committee chair.
Well,
no, there was a hearing, and the minority is also allowed. You know, if the majority calls two witnesses, the minority gets to call one.
Oh, okay.
So I have no idea what the I have no idea what the committee hearing was, or whether it was just him renting applying for a committee room and calling people in to spew bullshit on the Senate. In the Senate committee rooms, but it was just unbelievably unscientific, just simply assertions with no data to back it up. And this, it's how I understand how maggots can be so effing stupid. They don't want to take anything. Fauci doesn't know what he's saying. And according to these people, you can't believe anything Fauci says because he's not scientific at all. But this woman who pretends to be a nurse spews all kinds of garbage, and that's taken as fact. It just blows me away. Anyhow. But, yeah, I did find the Navy, the Senate bean soup recipe, and it's posted in the chat. I'll put it in the other chat, too.
Now, yeah, I'm reading the recipe now. It looks easy.
Looks gassy, too.
Well, a little baking soda will take care of that.
A little blanket warmer, huh?
Ah. A little Dutch oven action.
The cleanest ear will be standing straight up, man.
It's nothing but water, beans, onion, and ham. And butter. Ooh, I need to get some ham hocks. I want some now.
I think you can get them at the Wiggling Pig.
I can get some. And a big old square pan of cornbread. You know it.
Man, spring is upon us. Some green beans. You're making me hungry. Stop it.
Oh, I'm starving. Oh, thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs tells me that there's Fresca in Bridgeport, West Virginia, at Target there. I'll bet you the minute I get there, that's all gone. Target's about 2 hours up the road. Bridgeport's right by Clarksburg on I-79. Is everybody just tired and worn out from the week or what?
Well, I'm going to give you another one for another use for baking soda. I may have done this before, but it's called Velveting Beef, and it's a Chinese restaurant trick. And you take your tough cuts of meat, and you slice it for stir fry, and then you put baking soda on it, let it sit for 30 minutes, rinse it off, pat it dry, and then cook. And you'd be amazed at how tenderized the meat is. It flat works. So you can put it in navy bean soup, and then you can do your stir fry.
Oof, that sounds good.
Well, it starts out. Yeah, have you ever noticed when you go to a Chinese restaurant how tender the meat is in a Chinese restaurant?
Absolutely.
And this is their process. This is how they can buy cheap cuts of meat, slice it, and then make a very tender beef with broccoli or, you know, whatever the beef recipe is. And my wife tried it a couple of times, and it is amazing. It works.
And the process again?
Oh, you slice your meat like you're going to use it for your stir fry?
Yeah.
And then you sprinkle, I don't know, 3/4 of a tablespoon to 8 ounces of meat or something like that, and stir it all together, let it sit for 30 minutes, and then give it a quick rinse, pat it dry, and throw it in the pan, and throw it in the wok, and stir it up. And
that's it. That's all.
Nice, tender meat.
That's amazing. I had the Szechuan hot pot with beef from Mr. Chen's Chinese Kitchen in Birmingham, and I'm still talking about it. Annette and I were watching Resident Alien last night, and I said, I'm kind of hungry. You want to call DoorDash for Mr. Chen's Authentic Chinese Kitchen? She goes, no, go down to the Half Shell and bring back some roasted oysters. I'll be back in 2 days.
Well, this doesn't take 2 days, and you can make your own. And it's just amazing. We've done it with stroganoff, just a regular old beef stroganoff. Was the difference between night and day, and we had the meat in the freezer, because we buy a lot, and we cut it all up and then freeze it. And one of them we made with the baking soda, and one of them we did without. And the difference was night and day off the same chunk of meat.
Oh, wow. Well, Jude in the Great Northwest is baking this evening. She made a mixed berry pie and a nice big pot of River Moon coffee, the Keep It Lit blend. While I listen to all of you, special hello to Steve in Georgistan and Miss Karen. Memories of Mike's book signing with those two in those majestic North Georgia mountains. We tended to the barbecue and sharing photos of Utah's Zion National Park. Hope a door opens again to be with them. Let it be. Let it be.
She gave us a shell garden, Robin. She gave us a bunch of shells, and Karen made a beautiful shell garden that we still treasure to this day.
Oh, how lovely.
Yep.
Oh, Jude is an amazing soul.
That's a nice lady. Just a genuine, just beautiful soul.
No, we had it. We had a blast cooking.
Is Jude
cooking.
The one that gave us the polished rocks, too? Somebody has some polished rocks, I
think. Yeah, that's Jude.
Are you going to try and get Mike up for the June gathering?
Well, I'd love to. I just don't. I don't know if we're going to have enough buy-in to do it.
And speaking of that, when you start working at making the reservations, would it be possible? And of course, it would be on me, not you, to put a couple of days before or a couple of days after at the same place for one room?
I don't see why not. Depending on how things work out, maybe to a different location, but yeah.
Because wife and I were thinking about exploring the nation's new national park for a couple of days before the gathering or a couple of days after.
There's a lot to explore. There's 1,600 miles of trails.
Well, we won't be walking trails. It's going to be from sitting in the rented car, because I can't hike anymore.
There's places you can go to without actually hiking that have spectacular views.
I mean, I can do a little bit of walking, but I'm not nearly what I used to do. I mean, 20 miles a day with a 35, 40-pound pack was nothing. Today, I'd be lucky to do 20 yards with a 40-pound pack.
Yeah, and most of the hiking around here, you know, at best, you know, you you take a 1 liter water bottle and a couple of packages of crackers in case, you know, you get, you know, really hungry or something. But yeah, you know, mile here, mile there. But there's some steep stuff. But there's a lot of places, Roger, where you can, you know, there's just a paved, you know, like through the state park, there's just a paved walkway down to the gorge overlook. A lot of it's very accessible by car.
It's just a bitch getting old and tired and arthritic. And
yeah, but it beats the alternative, right?
Yeah, well, at least I'm walking on the days he's not pushing them up.
Bingo. That's kind of everything.
That's, you know, I go into a doctor's appointment and they say, well, how are things going? I say, well, at least I'm walking on the days he's not pushing them up.
Yeah.
That always every day above a chuckle out of them.
Every day above the ground is a good one.
Yep. No, I just, it's a pain in the ass. I mean, we went out for a climb up, I forget the name of the butte, but you climb up and it's got this beautiful overlook all over Eugene and from up there at the top. And I was really happy that there was the four-year-old along with us, because I could pretty much keep up with the four-year-old. You know, they don't hike trails too fast. But that's life.
I'm going to start training in my yard.
Four?
For walking and hiking.
Huh. Nice.
I got a big enough yard. If I figured if I walked the whole damn thing about 20 times, I'll...
Oh, 20, yeah, 20 laps a day probably do you real good.
My problem's not really the stamina. It's the pain in my hip and lower back that nails me down.
Is that arthritic, Roger, or is that, like, could that be, like, vascular occlusion?
Well, the hip and back thing actually starts out from unloading one of the tall propane tanks off a mule one time in the backcountry of Yosemite. And when I took it off, my foot was on an uneven surface, and the heel, it twisted my leg, and instead of just dropping the propane tank, I held on to it and tore up my hip. And then, of course, because we were in the backcountry, I could take one day off, and then we were moving the next day, and I started walking on it, and that's what caused me to get the hip replacement. And then, of course, when they did the hip replacement, one leg is a little bit longer than the other leg, which I didn't discover for a long time, which caused me to be walking unsteady, which has screwed up where the spine comes into your pelvic girdle, whatever they want to call that. And apparently I've got some pinched nerves in there and some lower back pain, even though now I wear a lift in one shoe. And then, of course, driving a moving van for 3 years didn't help matters either.
No, that's
loading and unloading furniture.
That and the time sitting in the van will beat you up by itself.
Yeah, well, you take your wallet out and make sure you're sitting flat. But anyhow, it's just 77 years of beating my body up. That's, you know, 3 years off highway truck driving with a no air seat on rough roads.
77 years of life on Earth.
Yeah, and it's just at some point it starts getting to you, and people think, "Oh, you were a teacher. How could you hurt yourself as a teacher?" I only was a teacher for 20 years. The rest of my work career was all physical type stuff, and you know, I mean, even farming's not that easy on a body.
No, hell no. I got a tech question for those. And it comes with some good news, too.
Jeremy's in the room.
Oh, hey, Jeremy. Dr. Bill, Annette and I talked to Dr. Bill yesterday, and Dr. Bill is coming back.
Good.
He wants to do a show maybe, you know, an hour a week. But, you know, he moved from Beckley down into Summers County, he and his wife. And he went to open the box where his old Plantronics was, and, well, his Plantronics was in pieces. So he's got to get a new headset. And I'd like for him to have a really nice kick-ass headset if anybody has a recommendation for same.
Does he want to have one with a mic?
Oh, yeah.
Or a separate mic?
Yo, no, he wants a mic because he's just going to use his laptop.
Well, I've gone with the Bluetooth headset and a separate mic. Which I'm using.
I like my Plantronics.
You know, quite honestly, yeah. You could spend a small fortune on a headset, and they're just as good as the ones that cost you $50. The only time the high-end headsets come in for use is like Bose for your own personal music. Other than that, they're all the fucking same. Every last one of them. You're just going to pay more for a shittier, higher-priced headset.
Okay, so just buy one around here locally, wander into Staples,
I would say stay under 120 if he's going to buy one, and he'll be happy. But much more.
Oh, you're not have to spend that kind of money.
Right, like $50 is going to be fine.
Any particular brands?
I would, even the one that Sparky uses, he always comes through clear no matter what he's using, and half the time I don't with a $200 headset.
Okay, well, I will get in touch and let him know. Hey, Roger, Tom in sunny San Rafael sent you a note. Skinner's Butte in Eugene.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I love
it. Since the son and daughter-in-law have been living here a lot longer than we have, when we go on family outings, it's just... They drive in front, I drive behind, we go somewhere, we do something, and then they tell me all about it, and the name kind of escapes me. I just trying to learn too many names of too many new places too quickly, and they just all blend together. But Skinner Butte sounds correct. Thank you.
Hey, Robin, the other one I use, it's got a mic on it, is a Logitech.
Okay.
And I've had it for years.
And so Dr. Bill's getting
go this way.
And he's getting, so it'll probably be like March, but he's getting ready to have cataract surgery done, and he's so excited because he's been dealing with that for years, and he said, you know, just to be able to see normally is going to be a beautiful thing.
Does he have cataracts in both eyes?
Yeah, he's getting one done like the 25th and the other one done March the 11th.
Okay, good. I would highly recommend getting him done separately, not together.
Yeah, that's what his surgeon recommended.
My father had cataract surgery, and it came out beautifully, one eye and then the next eye. And then my father-in-law had cataract surgery, and they totally fucked up one eye and only halfway fucked up the other eye. And he ended up being blind, virtually blind at the end of his life. But if one eye gets done and it's good, then go back to that surgeon for the second eye. But if they fuck the first eye up, go find a new surgeon.
Yeah, this guy's been doing it for like 20 years. He has good success. He told Dr. Bill it takes about 6 minutes.
Yeah, it's my... When my wife had the... laser surgery, I forget what they call it, but it wasn't cataracts. It was to deal with her, I mean, shit, she needed to put glasses on to find her glasses. She was so nearsighted.
Yeah.
But I watched it on the monitor out in the, they had two waiting rooms there. One of them, they had the TVs, you know, you bring somebody in to have the surgery, and there was, you could wait in the regular waiting room, or you could go into this other room, and you could watch them do the surgery on the closed circuit TV, and it was amazing how they just go in and prop the eyelid open and cut the cornea and go in and scrape the shit and then lay it back down and out the door you go.
Amazing.
And then you have to wear
Well, in my wife's case, you have to wear goggles to 24 hours a day for like the first 4 days to make sure you didn't rub your eye or anything, because the clear cornea, when they put it back on, I mean, they cut it seven-eighths of the way around, and then flop it back, and then play with the surface of the eye, and then flop it back over. And when they flop it back over, it's just kind of held there by gravity. There's no stitches or anything or surface tension. And if you rub your eye, you could dislodge it, and that fucks everything up. So she had to wear goggles for a couple of days to deal with it. But it's amazing what they can do with eyeballs these days. Just amazing.
Jack just joined us.
Hello, Jack.
Hey, Jack.
Hi. I was having to fiddle around a little bit to get it to work, but I think I've got it now. Hey, everybody.
So you're well set with saltines?
Me? I got one sleeve left out of four. I actually, what was on the shelves was those Zestas. They're like way lighter, or they're
yeah,
like
they are.
What do you call it? Like fila dough? Like when they make those Greek pastries with that?
Yeah, they are. And I noticed now we're into the esoterics of saltines. This program. I took out a block of cream cheese, and I was just kind of being a heathen about it, and you know, getting a little dab of cream cheese off the block with the cracker, and it can't stand the torque. And it,
right.
And the Zestas break. The Piggly Wiggly store brand stands up to the pressure.
Well, I didn't get the part about the ones that were going rancid either. When y'all said some crackers went rancid,
stale, kind of get a rank taste to them. I know exactly what Randy's talking about.
I mean, I get the stale part, but usually, you know, I just kind of twist the wax paper sleeve back up and put a clothespin on it. And they're usually fine, you know. But yeah, they get stale, but the rancid part, I guess I never let them go that long, you know. Oh, and let's see, weather here. We had a little dusting of snow. It's been like totally overcast for like 3 days.
You got dusted in Shreveport?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't think it was just it was more than just the frost left, overnight, from overnight. It was snow, but just a tiny bit. It wasn't anything like it was.
Still enough to get it. Still enough for the city to declare martial law, though, wasn't it? I mean, snow in the South.
Yeah, what they were predicting. Two or three days ago. It was Wednesday. They were saying, okay, it's going to be ice on everything and power outages and, ice on trees. Trees are going to fall, and ice will be on the roadway from overnight. And I didn't catch it real early in the morning, but like today the road was dry, so it was pretty cold. It's supposed to go down to like 25 tonight, but it's supposed to be sunny tomorrow, and then for like a week, it's all sunny, no partly cloudy or anything. So I'm really ready for that. Yeah, I can definitely sympathize with you. When it's like overcast, man, it just is like a crap day, for me. I can't stand it. So, we just got that people sliding all over the place, when there's ice, it's bad. But So I don't know exactly, you know, I didn't hear, you know, if schools were being school was being canceled, you know, when they expected that ice overnight or not. I just didn't follow the weather or anything. But we should be, you know, it'll still be a little chilly, but I'm, you know, looks like the report is good. You know, when they're changing, you know, like, oh, maybe sunny, maybe partly cloudy, you know, and they're showing that, you know, a day off or something for partly cloudy. It's like, ah, who knows what the weather's going to be, but they've got it for a whole week of sunny, so that ought to be good. Pretty reliable. Let's see.
Am I still on?
Yes, you are.
Does anybody know what's going on with the fertilizer plant in North Carolina?
I haven't seen an update on that. Ron and Raleigh might know. So maybe he could give us an update. I'll check. I'll do a quick search.
Yeah, I was really worried about that. It sounds like they have more fertilizer than...
Well, as of the latest thing I've got is as of February 2nd, still burning. That was 2 days ago. Everything's 2 days ago. Okay. Suppressed, but explosion still a possibility. Fears remain as North Carolina fertilizer plant burns. Yesterday, fertilizer plant fire in North Carolina threatens to risk of explosion remains at Winston-Salem fertilizer plant. That's yesterday. Fertilizer plant in North Carolina burns for third day with no end in sight. Nothing lately, though. Ron, have you heard anything?
I did.
No, go ahead, Ken.
The amount of fertilizer they had there sounded like it was almost double or a little more than double that was in the Beirut blast in Lebanon.
No, it's and a huge stockpile.
You're talking about 2-3 square miles flattened.
Yeah, like I said, I saw what happened in West Texas when that plant went up.
Yes, and that was only...
Go ahead.
Okay, just like the Oklahoma bombing, you know, that took a whole building, and that was only a drum or two drums.
Oh, yeah, it's potent. I mean, you can imagine a mountain. You can blow an entire mountain up with a... an ordinary garden variety ammonium nitrate blast on a mountaintop removal site is about the same as 10 Tomahawk cruise missiles landing at the same time. So, you know, that gives you some idea.
Man, this is like right in the middle of the city.
Sure.
It's crazy.
Yeah, why not?
They said...
Well, you know, you wouldn't want any of those you wouldn't want any of those job killing regulations, would you, Ken? They kill jobs. Unregulation just kills people who have jobs.
There's a shopping center less than a mile away, full on shopping center. It's not in the middle of nowhere.
No. And I'm sure there's a bunch of not wealthy people who live near there.
Yeah, the story I read, of course, the town grew up around it. I think that's called no zoning laws.
I think that's exactly what that's called, Ken.
Yep. You know, the hardest thing for them to understand is regulation, but yet their favorite thing is sports, you know, NASCAR, football. And all those things have regulations, don't they?
Well, they certainly do. I mean,
Imagine if Republicans got hold of the NFL rule book. What offsides? What clipping? What crackback block? Wait a minute. What clothes hanger tackle? You'd have football players dropping left and right. Oh, wait. Funny how that all works out.
And what is going on with the legalization effort as far as we had some Republican in, what was it, South Carolina was putting forward a bill for legalization?
Was it South Carolina?
Where does that stand?
Well, you know, you get a mixed answer. Because some people think that Joe Biden could just do it with a stroke of the pen with the DEA. I'm pretty sure he'd get sued by the Republicans, you know, just for trying to presidenting without Mitch McConnell and Joe Manchin's authority. And I'm not sure that would work. I mean, I'd be part of. Part of my platform will be legalize it.
Yeah. Well, we've got all these low-hanging fruit that the Democrats just know that they can do, but they're not even trying. So some of this is really pissing me off. I just don't understand it. And it's got to be just the corporate Dems are not interested. They're not interested in doing these things for the people, period.
Well, I'm not so sure that's necessarily the case, Ken, because the House can pass all it wants to, but it takes legislative energy, if we can put it that way. And I'm not making excuses, but I guess I'm making excuses. You can pass a legalize it bill through the House, and all it's going to do is go and die in the Senate because it won't get 60 votes.
So the Democrats going to let the Republicans come up with a legalization bill and lose this whole thing?
Well, no, it's not a let. Right. It's not a matter of letting. It's a matter of, you know, if the filibuster was gone, maybe we could pass a bill in the House, send it over to the Senate, send it up to Biden, and you know we're all twisting up a number in the morning. But I don't care. I don't care if the House passed the Kittens Are Cute Act of 2022, Mitch McConnell would immediately accuse kittens of being socialist, communist, Rosicrucian, Illuminati, and the bill would die. I mean, that's just the reality of the so-called gridlock that afflicts us now. And you know, if they said, well, you know, we could break the filibuster to pass the Kittens Are Cute Act of 2022, and Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema would say, well, you know, that's a really lousy thing to do to the people with pet tarantulas. We can't. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't like it, but it's real.
Well, see, that's what it sounds like. It's coming down to just excuse after excuse after excuse at this point. But and they're going to lose all the minorities, everything, if they don't get something done. And I know it's because of Manchin and Sinema, but we've got other corporate Dems, too, there. And yeah, we're excuses are just going to run us right into the Republicans. I don't get it.
That's
yeah. You have it. I'm not.
Who is that? Somebody was talking. I mean, I think the House has passed a pretty ambitious agenda over the course of the last couple of years. But, and again, even as long as you don't break the filibuster, Mitch McConnell runs us all. But we are at the end of the program. Yeah. We are at the end of the program. Of course, you're welcome to stay and participate in the back porch. It will continue onward for as long as it goes. I've got to get the program uploaded, and I guess come Monday we will be at $1,100 because we got down to $799 thanks to Rico and Kevin and Ralphs. Hopefully that gets remedied a little bit over the weekend. That would be wonderful. But it really is a struggle, and there's bills coming due, so we'll see what happens. Thanks everybody. Thanks to everybody who participated in the front porch. This was, as Jude put it, a contemplative front porch. It was a nice conversation. They always are. And thanks to our contributors who, with your subscription gifts through Patreon and PayPal, help keep the program on the air, and our a la carte contributors, thank you so much. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this long-running conversation. In whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you, Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Now proudly a union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster, your vaccines, get your KN95 masks. Order your test kits from the government just to have them on hand. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance 15 to 20 feet. And, you know, if somebody comes burbling along talking about, I got a pretty IQ, I think I can handle this, boss. Well, avoid that insurrectionist like the plague. Because he is. Later.